Hey, Chris Manning here from Locked On Cavs. Coming up on today's show, Evan Demerle and I are going to talk about Cavs Jazz, a game Cleveland lost 126 to 113. Jordan Clarkson returned to Cleveland. Colin Sexton scored a career high 32 points, and the Cavs missed a whole bunch of players due to injury. Our coverage of that game is coming up next on Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
You are Locked On Cavaliers. Your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My, my, my. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
Kyrie Irving, he's gone. Xbox at him today at the Q.
On the blow block.
He put him in cement boots. Colin Sexton for two.
The ball.
All right, Evan, the Cavs lost to the Jazz, again, 126 to 113, if you were not watching at home. Leading the way, Colin Sexton had a very good night. Was the best player for the Cavs, a 32-point night on 11 of 17 shooting, 4 of 6 from 3, 6 of 8 from the line. Kevin Porter Jr. had 16 points in a start. Kevin Love had 22 and 9, but among the injured, you had no Andre Drummond, you had no Darius Garland, so you had two starters out there. You know, Tristan Thompson, and then you had no McKinney, no Exum, and obviously no Dylan Windler. So you saw 29 minutes of Matthew Dellavedova, 17 minutes of Ante Zizic, and the Cavs just lost. Evan, we'll get into a lot of, I think, just kind of a couple big things coming out of this one, but what was your kind of big takeaway from this one?
I learned that the Cavs aren't really going to look their best down six players, and they made a struggling Jazz squad look elite. And it is what it is. I'm a little befuddled with JB Bickerstaff playing only seven players for the majority of the game and not getting Matt Mooney and Dean Wade, who granted played the night before for the Canton Charge against Fort Wayne, but they were available, and I think maybe the Cavs are just getting a little bit gassed, especially maybe midway through the third, and then that's when Utah really started to pull away. But still a little pleasantly surprised that Cleveland was able to hang in for so long against a Jazz team that, like I said just a few seconds ago, it has been struggling for the most part lately, but you know what, it is what it is. And a couple frustrating things, but you know, I didn't really expect a win coming into this game, and it ended up going a lot better than I thought it would.
Now, let's first just talk about Gobert, because one of my takeaways from this game was that he remembered how to be a really big guy from a Utah perspective, and I thought it was very evident from the get-go that he was going to impact this game, because the way that Utah decided to defend the Cavs was, okay, we're going to put Bojan Bogdanovic on Kevin Love. He is going to guard Kevin. We're going to, you know, if you want to post Kevin, that's fine. Like, we believe in Bogdanovic, his ability to at least make that matchup work. And Rudy Gobert defended Larry Nance. So one of the things that we're not there. We're recording this right after the game. So this would be, I think, maybe a fair question for Bickerstaff, or just kind of looking at the tape to see if what the Jazz did. But Larry, who I thought had a pretty good game regardless, I think was at least energetic, had a 16-8 night. 16-8. So, and two steals. So a pretty decent game from him. But I thought the thing that Utah did with him pretty early was, okay, when Gobert's on the floor and he's on the floor, we're going to like give him the 3-point shots. We're going to dare him to take them. And he missed his first one, and he obviously took six. And that's like a pretty high number for Larry. But you could tell after that first one that, like, when it didn't go in, you could just tell that's that still is not a shot. It may never be a shot where you're just like, wow, like, this is something he's uber comfortable with. I think he's become comfortable enough to outtake them, obviously, but it's not something that I think he is clearly feeling particularly strong in taking for whatever reason that is. I think that was one of the things that Evan did early, and I thought Gobert, again, who takes a lot of flack, who's kind of been at the center of a lot of these, him and Mike Conley have been at the center of a lot of the Jazz are struggling kind of instances. I thought he was kind of the guy who kind of dictated a lot of the flow of this game. And I don't think the Cavs really had an answer for navigating him. He was, he had five blocks. He was really kind of stifling a lot of drives. Sexton had a very nice game, but the worst moments he had were really going up against Gobert. And, you know, that was just kind of one of the things. I don't think the Cavs, just whether it was coaching, whether it was its roster, were really equipped to kind of deal with that size.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I actually just like took a quick note while watching this game saying that there is a noticeable difference for Utah in terms of when Gobert was on the floor and when he was off the floor. He was getting his way for the most part in the first half and throughout the game on both sides of the ball. And excuse me, but yeah, no, just to your point about Larry, I think to be fair to him, he's more accustomed to playing a bit of that bench role, and he's embraced the whole jack of all trades, master of none, because he was a little bit all over the floor in both ends tonight. I mean, like you touched on, he had 16, 8, and 8 to go with two steals. He was 2 of 6 from 3-point range. So he's just kind of dabbling a little bit everywhere, and I think that's super effective when he is playing his traditional, maybe just standard role long-term with this team, where he's just a high-energy big guy off the bench. And that just kind of, you know, makes it a little bit tougher per se, just when you have to put him in such like a extended role. He played 39 minutes tonight, so he got a little bit of rest every now and then, but JB, like I touched on, only leaned on 7 guys the majority of this game. So I think just this team looked gassed towards the end, and like you said, Utah was kind of daring him to take threes, and that gamble paid off, and it kind of worked out overall for Utah on for a little bit. And just the fact that Cleveland was so limited, Utah didn't play down to the situation and just kind of put the Cavs away as soon as they could around midway in the third, and then just kind of coasted through the fourth quarter to wrap this one up. And just kind of just, you know, the final score is a little bit misleading, because like maybe in the final 2-3 minutes, Cleveland had a little bit of a burst just to pull this, make it a little closer. So
yeah, there's a couple areas where if you want to look at where the Cavs did okay, you know, the Jazz, I think, were just much better offensively. Had an offensive rating of 134. The Cavs had an offensive rating of 120. So the Cavs actually like scored for the most part like fairly well. But I think where you just kind of saw the weakness in this roster was, you know, even on a night where Donovan Mitchell was not like the best version of Donovan Mitchell, and KPJ, I think, deserves like a lot of credit for that. On first watch, we'll need to go back and watch that. But Bogdanovich was 10-19. Royce O'Neal got pretty open. I thought this was a pretty bad Jetty game in terms of that sense of him guarding O'Neal for a lot of this one. Gobert was obviously very good. You know, then you had Clarkson came in and had a pretty good game. You know, Joe Ingles really didn't do much, but did have 8 assists, really facilitated well for them. Mm-hmm. And it was just like the guys that were like, aside from Mitchell, that you sort of need them to click, really did well. Evan, as we kind of wrap up the first segment here, what did you make of Zizic? Again, just to run through his stat line, 17 minutes, 3-7 from the field, to only 2 rebounds, 2 fouls, 6 points total for him. What did you just make of what we saw from Monte, who was kind of pressed into duty, but was really the only guy that of the 7 that played real minutes that didn't play more than 20?
I don't think Ante is going to be in the NBA next season, but he played admirably in kind of a weird situation. And like you said, only played 17 minutes tonight, was one of the 2 people off the bench for Cleveland. And I mean, it was just kind of okay overall, was maybe more or less a bit of a body. I'm glad he didn't get into serious foul trouble getting bullied by Bradley and Gobert throughout the game, but he did okay. And I don't really like, I guess my ship has sailed on Ante Zizek a while ago, so I don't really have the highest of expectations when he does get like extended burn, but he played all right. That's all I can really ask for.
Yeah, I thought he was okay. Like, he missed one kind of little baby hook that was against like a smaller guy. And if I'm just like, okay, if he can't just like bully guys like there, like what are we doing? And clearly just had like a size differential against Gobert, which is a problem. Which, you know, I mean, that's going to happen. Gobert's good. Mm-hmm. Gobert's very big. Gobert could win Defensive Player of the Year for all of the warts he has as a player. But, you know, the Cavs, I think, mostly just kind of got outclassed in this one, even though, like, Kevin, you know, I think the telling things is, like, Kevin is 6 of 11 from 3. He's a whopping 1 of 4 from inside the arc. Really did no damage, you know, kind of inside the arc. He's kind of been relegated just to spotting up, which is a weird thing for him. But Utah is one of the teams that can really make him play that way. So, all right, we're going to take a quick break and come back, talk about Colin Sexton, who, frankly, we probably should have led the show with, considering he set a new career high in points and I thought played pretty well. But that's going to come up next on Locked On Cavs. All right, we are back here on Locked On Cavs. Chris Manning here with Evan Damrell. Evan, again, Colin Sexton, amid a bad game for the team as a whole, I thought played pretty well. This is the third time in the last four games where he has scored 28 points or more. He said he tied a career high against the Pelicans last Friday and then set a new career high by 1 point in this one in 39 minutes on 17 shots, 4-6 from three, and 6-8 from the line. 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals, only 1 turnover, and 2 fouls. I thought a really good night for him. Anything in particular about his night did you feel particularly strong about, or have a kind of just is there anything in what he did in this game that really stood out to you?
Well, just to preface, Chris and I aren't moving the goalposts on Colin Sexton for those who are listening.
Let's get this out of the way.
I got a little bit more
here. Evan was going to be like Midwest nice about this. Like, and I'm just,
oh, you know, no, I wasn't. I have something very long-winded typed up for this.
Okay. I come from people that are from New York, and you know what? This is I don't move the freaking goalpost to Colin Sexton. I think there are things about him I quite like. If you actually pay attention to my takes, you would know that I believe that. I think Colin does stuff very well. I think there's stuff he does not do well. And also, I don't give two craps if I'm correct. I do not fucking care if I am right or wrong. I am just interested in consuming this, thinking about it, talking about it, having fun doing that. I do not give a shit if I'm right.
Well, before we get started on this,
since hey, Hiram, really from New York, so, do you... Hiram, don't come on, stop being a troll.
Hey, since you have family from New York, do you ever say "I'm walking here" or "forget about it"?
I'm walking here.
Exactly, exactly. See, when you get. When Hiram forces you out of town, at least you can go back to New York.
I'm gonna pay like $3,000 for a 1-bedroom apartment and be in a lot of debt. So thanks, Hiram.
That. Yeah. But today I learned that Colin Sexton would be able to start for the Milwaukee Bucks, the Phoenix Suns, the Los Angeles Lakers. There's more. The Philadelphia 76ers, the Orlando Magic, the Bull, Frigate Cities, the Bulls, the Knicks, and the Pistons, the Mavericks, and even the Spurs. Even though Eric Bledsoe, Ricky Rubio, Avery Bradley, Ben Simmons, or Shake Milton because of injuries, Markelle Fultz, Luka Doncic, and Deonte Murray, the legitimate stars and superstars for their respective teams, are fit better than Sexton ever would schematically. And starting for the Bulls, Knicks, and Pistons is the equivalent of starting a point guard for the Cavaliers right now, which really isn't that high of a mark. But Colin had a really good night tonight. I like Colin Sexton. I think he's a fun and he's an exciting player. People may disagree with me on what I think he is long term, but that's fine. That's the beauty of the internet. We can have public debate and nobody should get their feelings hurt about
also, someone if having you have a different opinion. If you have a take that you don't agree with, just at me or email me. Like, yeah, it's much more enjoyable.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't email me. I don't care.
Yeah. But no, Colin was great tonight, and you touched on this after the game on Saturday, and then when we recorded last night, that he is starting to utilize his aggressiveness in a way that is super helpful for his game, where he's drawing fouls, but he's not necessarily foul hunting. He had 8 free throw attempts tonight, converted 6 of them, was 4-6 from 3-point from beyond the arc, and he kind of, you know, stuffed the stat sheet like you noted when you're listing his career high and everything, and he was super impressive. And I think I touched on this yesterday too, that if /1 Tristan Thompson's gone, Colin's going to kind of be that dog and the heart and soul and energy of this team. And games like this are a good indicator of that. And, you know, going forward and for the remainder of the season, I'm sure we're going to see a lot of like impressive individual performances that may not result in them and affect the win column. And by the way, Chris and us, I don't really want the Cavs to lose. We just want them to be normal. That's the other thing. But, no, I was very happy with Colin's performance tonight. He was all over the place, and I have fun watching him, and I don't want people to think like I actively dislike a player or a human being. Like, he plays for the Cavs. As long as he's doing well, I'm happy, and he's been doing well for a very decent stretch now.
Yeah, a couple of notes I think that I think really to me are pretty important here. His free throw rate is up like a 0.3, which is pretty good over the course of a season. He's taking 1.1 more free throws per game than he did last season. He's shooting 84.6% coming into tonight for the year. That's a little bit up from last year. That's going to make him a more efficient player. I think it's something, again, is really useful. And if you look at when he's had big games of late, if you look at the Philly game from last week when he had the 28, Sexton took 9 free throws. If you look at the game against New Orleans, he only took 5, but still was pretty aggressive in the game. And in this one, he takes 8 free throws. There is something to the idea that I really am just going to keep harping on this, that I think this is one of the ways that we are going to see Colin, I think, really improve. And also, to his credit, there's a couple of times in this game where I saw him drive and he didn't force up a shot. He was conscious mm-hmm. that Gobert was there, and he actually passed the ball out and wasn't just forcing the shots. That's a really good thing for a guy that is leading the team in shot attempts. That, he took 17 shots in this game. That's tied with Nance for the team lead. He was kind of engineering so much of this. I would have to look at the advanced box score. I haven't done the app, but I would really imagine that he really was kind of probably had the highest usage rate of anyone on the team. And all things considered, maybe it feels a tad bit empty because they lost the way they did, but he mm-hmm. still is doing stuff that is impressive. And it's you look at Atlanta and it's we all, I think, are rightfully excited about Trae Young. And it's this is a different situation, and Colin gets his stuff differently. He's a little less showy, all of that stuff. But he's not as good as Trae. Trae is a better player, better passer. Colin's a better defender. Trey's legitimately the worst defender in the NBA. But if you're going to derive, I think all situations are different, but you can definitely say a guy is doing stuff, even if some of it is empty because the team isn't winning. You can eat the cookie and you can get the cookie and eat it too. You can actually do that. I'm butchering that phrase, but whatever. The other thing that I liked out of this one that I haven't done, I've been meaning to do kind of a dive on and kind of look at, but I like when they get Colin Sexton moving and they have him cutting a little bit. Mm-hmm. I like when Colin is, cutting off of Kevin. I like when he's there's a couple times where he got easy dunks because they fed him passes when he's sprinting up the floor. It really allows him to use that speed. It really allows him to kind of just be the best version of himself. And it just kind of allows him to get a full head of steam. And, there's at least 3 instances of that in this game. And that is something, whether it's kind of taking that little backdoor cut play they ran with Delly and Clarkson, where Clarkson would just do a quick back cut and they'd fling up a pass and he'd score. If you could do something like that, whether it's with Kevin, whether it's with Larry, whether it's you have Darius do it and bring up the ball and have Colin kind of be a little more active off ball, which he's not a lot with kind of the sets they run a lot right now with Love and Drummond. I think there's ways you can kind of lean into some of the stuff Colin does really well, even more, and kind of see where that gets you. I would be curious to at least see it over this last stretch of the season.
No, I'd agree. And I think kudos to this coaching staff. I mean, I do have a little bit of an axe to grind just playing 7 players tonight, but whatever. I could sit here and talk about that all night, but it's not, I doubt we're actually going to get a realistic answer. And you and I touched on it in between segments that, I understand why JB and the staff went with 7 players and played Matt Mooney and Dean Wade. But to focus on Colin, I have noticed that they are playing to his strengths a lot more. And there's actually going to be a little bit of maybe tangible growth just to see where Colin is heading into his 3rd season with what he's doing. And like you said, they're just kind of playing to his strengths, like his speed. And, he's starting to make those smart reads, or he legitimately respected Gobert as a rim protector and somebody who, instead of just kind of driving in throwing a wild shot, like you said, he'd kick it out or kick it to the right player, make the right play. Colin had a good game all around. And this is something you probably bookmark going forward to say, give me an example of Colin Sexton showing legitimate growth from his rookie season to his sophomore season. And this is one of those moments, and I'm cautiously optimistic to see where this goes, but I am definitely intrigued by it for sure, just to see if this can just, a lot of what he's doing becomes sustainable. That, I'm happy to admit I'm wrong that Colin Sexton shouldn't be a 6-man and should be starting with his team. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah, I just want to say, continuing, it's very impressive of Colin to, like, again, like, I think one of the underrated things we haven't talked about enough this year is probably just the fact that the guy was, like, an 11.3 point shooter in December and then, like, got up above 40% for the next month and actually was, like, leaning into taking more threes. The dude, if, like, one of the things that I feel like I was most wrong about when I started covering and blogging and talking about basketball was, like, that work ethic, like some of the, like, I was so reliant on numbers that, like, I lost a little bit, which is weird because I, like, very much value just, like, human interaction and like the I value culture and, like, kind of was told how important that was by covering college teams and whatnot. But, like, Sexton being such a grinder and, like, just being a guy who's going to show up and work his ass off and do all that stuff and kind of, like, put in the work to get better, I think, like, does matter in a way. And I think you see it with stuff like this, like, the guy is, like, legitimately, like, a, like, kind of an underrated athlete, I think. He's strong. He's very fast. Like, I don't think his quickness really gets talked about enough because he's just learning how to use it functionally. And he's also just not a guy that's going to, like, talk about himself or, like, be on social media. Like, I'm 99.9% sure that Colin Sexton, like, does not run his own social media. Like, I don't think he gives a shit.
No, he doesn't. I think his sister or his cousin.
Or he has a brother that's, I know, a little pretty active on social and is at a lot of the games at the very least. So he doesn't care. And, like, the guy just, like, loves to hoop. And yeah, like, I think the tangible improvements you've seen from him are really one of the things and are based on that work ethic. And I think it's a big reason why the Cavs fell in love with him in the draft process. They will be the first ones to kind of tell you that. Evan, as we get out of here talking about this game, just thoughts on KPJ getting the start and how you thought he played.
Played well. He did. You and I both watched this game from home tonight, and he was talking to, I believe, Angel Gray pregame, and he touched on the fact that the difference between starting and coming off the bench is the fact that he has a bit more read of the game, and the difference is, like, he has to get a feel for the immediate tip, and so there's a bit of an adjustment period, but he just, I mean, he had 16, 4, and 4, one steal, one block, had three fouls, but, like, wasn't seriously a part of foul trouble and had the worst plus minus if you really want to delve into that stat tonight, too. But that's a little shaky to go off of. But he looked okay. And I think maybe it's just, like, you know, this team was so gassed by the third quarter and maybe having so many guys out tonight kind of threw everything for a loop, and Kevin Porter included, but he looked all right at the exit of this game, so I'm not too. I don't have a lot to really pin on this game, but, I mean, again, it's just another solid overall Kevin Porter performance.
Yeah, I thought he was aggressive. I thought at the very least, like, he was at least, like, willing to take the shots they needed to. I thought, you know, I thought he was active on defense. I thought he was at least, like, aware in defense. I like that he took 5 free throws and was pretty aggressive in driving. I like some of the passing he did. I thought he was probably the third best guy on the team. I don't really know how to feel about Kevin's night, you know? Like, he was 22-9, and I feel like I forgot he was on the floor for, like, decent chunks of the game, you know? Yeah. But that's probably, like, being a little unfair. Yeah, weird game. Cavs kind of outclassed. That we're going to come back after the break and talk about what's to come this week. I think a tough week for the Cavs overall. But any final thoughts here, Evan, as we wrap up talking about Cavs Jazz?
It's nice to see Jordan Clarkson back in town. It was nice the Cavs to give him a shout out when he checked in and welcomed him back to Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. Still weird calling it that, but
appear for this world for Jordan Clark's Kevin Love reuniting. It's really just what, just like heartwarming stuff from two bros just hugging each other.
Maybe they could watch the Joker before Jordan Clarkson leaves town. So there's
we're gonna go to Coda. If you know, you know.
There you go. What about you, buddy? Is there anything else that you want to touch on before we just kind of boot scoot and boogie on out of this game?
I think Spencer Davies tweeted it, but he had a thing of, like, all the people that are on the Jazz or, like, involved in that organization that, you know, that were there. And I'm going to see if I can just pull it up and tell you exactly, like, who was on there. It was cool to see Joe Tate there. They had a very good, like, they put out a clip that was pretty cool to see. But Deshauna Jopp was back because he coached for the Jazz. Alec Jensen was back. He, I think, interviewed for the Cavs job as well, and he used to coach the Canton Charge and Jordan Clarkson. So it's cool that they, like, kind of noted those guys, which is kind of a cool thing to see.
Yeah, that's always nice.
Yeah, so that was cool. And again, I like the Joe Tate thing that I'll put that in the show notes below. But they did this little video of a compendium of his calls. It really made me want to like rejigger our intro to include him in there. But probably won't do that because I feel like it's sort of really good as is, and I don't want it that like. But Joe Tate's great. It's cool to see him back at games. He doesn't like he famously like does not watch a lot of NBA basketball anymore. So it was cool to see him back in the arena. Okay, we're gonna take again a quick break back to talk about the rest of the week. All right, we're back here on Locked On Cavs. Chris Manning here with my co-host Evan Dammerl. Evan, Cavs Celtics on Wednesday, Daniel Boobie Gibson bobblehead yes. night, and then on yeah. Saturday, Cavs Nuggets. So this is, and then to the Spurs on Sunday. So kind of a tough week if you want to, especially include that Sunday game. What are you looking forward to, particularly Wednesday, but the rest of the week? What are some of the things you want to watch the rest of the week?
Curious to see how Cleveland's wing defense looks. I have noticed that, like, in Indiana, TJ Warren, in the game against Indiana, TJ Warren had a big night. For Utah, Bogdanovich had a big night. I mean, to be fair, the Jazz are one of the best three-point shooting teams in the league, but they definitely took advantage of Cleveland's perimeter defense being porous. Just pulling up the old box score here. Bear with me. I mean, Bogdanovich was 5 of 10 from 3. Royce O'Neal was 4 of 6 from 3. Mike Conley was 2 of 6. Donovan Mitchell was 3 of 7 from 3. The Cavs are giving up three-pointers. They gave up 20 tonight as a team. So, area of concern, especially on Wednesday with Jason Tatum and the Celtics coming into town. And I feel like I had low expectations for this game, and the Cavs played admirably. The Celtics are a legitimately well-coached team, and Jason Tatum's growth I don't think anyone expected, especially myself, because I used to rag on Jason Tatum a lot. So I feel like I hope, and I don't know if you are a religious man, Chris, but I hope Jason Tatum is a forgiving God in an unforgiving world.
He didn't get an apostrophe on his tattoo, so like, you know, like...
It's all God's plan.
Like he's into the multiple gods. I can't pronounce that word right now. Don't know why. Don't at me.
Polytheism.
He's into polytheism. Jason Tatum's into polytheism. That's what I learned from that tattoo. Kids, spell check. It's important.
For real. Spell no check. Spell
check your tats. Yeah, that game is the game that I think the Cavs might just get absolutely crapped on. If there is something about that game that I'm really curious about, I want to see how KPJ handles it. Part of me would really like to see him start on Wednesday. Like, it's maybe not optimal.
Well, the Cavs may have no choice.
Well, I don't know. I mean, do we know if Garland's out?
I don't know. It was like a weird, just, you know.
We know Garland's nothing out. About Darius Garland, by the way, and that's not our choice. That's just that's Darius's like in the Cavs like decision that we know very little about Darius Garland. It's a little weird, but yeah.
Andre Drummond could be out too. Alphonso McKinney is probably out till the end of the week, maybe against.
Yeah, I don't think Dante Exum is gonna play either. It doesn't seem
No. He's got glass bones and paper skin, just to quote SpongeBob real quick there, and that ankle injury looked pretty nasty. So the Cavs are probably gonna get steamrolled against Boston, and maybe they'll put up a little rivalry sake, but just to give everyone like a taste of how the season has gone between Boston and Cleveland so far. In their first matchup, Cleveland barely lost 119-113. The second time they played, Boston won 110-88. The third time they played, Boston won 129-117. And also, let's just remind everyone that during the preseason, Boston beat Cleveland so bad that John Boeheim had a legitimate meltdown and was having an existential crisis on signing up to coach this team. So, with how the Cavs are kind of beaten up right now, and the fact that Boston is kind of just steamrolling right now, it's the perfect storm for the Cavs to get smacked. So let's talk about Denver. I think that's going to be a fun matchup, and maybe the Cavs could win that one.
I don't think they're winning that game.
Well, I said could, not that they would.
So, like, one of my concerns this week is, like, I just don't feel like – I feel like some of the issues that we're going to see with this team right now is, like, I don't – it's hard to me for me to imagine that they're going to be able to, like, really just settle into a rhythm the rest of the way. Like, I think if you're – and Drummond is just such a massive piece and is, like, has a high usage rate just immediately off the bat that it's really hard to have him kind of in and out of the lineup. And if you don't have Tristan
– integrate him. So
yeah, trying to integrate him and like figure out like how much you want to kind of make him part of what you're going to do next year. Like I it's a little bit weird, and I don't even like know like exactly when he got hurt or like what the kind of dealio is there. Yeah, it's a little that's just a little bit odd to kind of handle. And like the other thing, I'm looking at the chart schedule, and so basically like I don't know. I would guess that considering both those, the Cans had some injuries this month. And they played Saturday and then they played Sunday. So they played a back-to-back and they dressed on Saturday. Cause we saw them like in their warmups and stuff and like everything. So like those got Dean Wade and Matt Mooney dressed on Saturday. These guys could just be like a little burned out.
Yeah.
But they play Wednesday morning at 11 a.m. That game's on ESPN Plus if you want to watch it. So they're going to play Wisconsin Herd, who are pretty good in that game. And then they play Saturday in Erie. So it's not like the Cavs can like have, it doesn't seem like this is like a, like, unless they're just going to say like the Charge, like, we don't care. And they could do that, but it hasn't really been their MO so far. They truly could just like let these guys like not have any real depth kind of backups unless they want to like maybe sign someone like a 10-day deal or something like that. But like, I don't even know if they have the roster spot to do that. I don't think I'd have to look. I don't remember off the top of my head if they have an open roster spot or not, because I just, nothing makes sense to me anymore. But like getting McKinney back would be a really big deal. And if you're looking at like the guy that I feel like is most likely to come back and then like not be pushed out of the lineup, it's him. He's the guy that I from all indications from what I understand, like he should, like Saturday seems like a realistic return date for him.
Yeah. If you want to answer your question, Cleveland has 13 players on their payroll.
Okay, so right, like now, sign a guy to a 10-day deal. Like you have room under the tax. You have like $1.2 million under the tax.
Yeah.
Sign a wing to a 10-day contract. Like I'm going to pull up a free agent list. But like I would I would just do that. Like frankly, like why not, you know?
Yeah.
What is the harm of just like, even if the guy doesn't play a single minute, at least you like are risking like not like risking overburdening guys, give yourself like a little bit of kind of insurance. I think like Justin Anderson's a one. Dang Adele, who the organization knows is I think available, and you could pick the best guy in the G League that's not on a 2-way deal and just like sign that guy. Just like do something to
Waiters.
Hey, Deion or JR, bring him home. Jerron Blossom game is like playing for the Windy City Bulls. He's not affiliated to any NBA organization right now. Why not just options. Yeah, you have like, again, these are not like actual solutions, but just give yourself like a body to kind of give yourself a little bit of depth. You could, I don't really see the downside of doing that, you know? Like it's, again, you're not going to pay the tax if you do this. Like just there's no harm.
No, not at all. And if I'm looking at the list now and like god, it is grim. So yeah, no, I think the guys maybe the Cavs have familiarity with, especially Dang Adele and Jerron Blossom, might be options just to come in on the 10-day and maybe you keep them on here for the remainder of the year for just emergency depth situations. I don't know. I could be wrong. Ty Windish on Contract Master, if you're happy to listen right now, go ahead and let me know. But yeah, no, I have concerns this week, especially with Denver, if they are lacking big man depth. Like, y'all thought Rudy Gobert had a good night. Wait till Nikola Jokic comes in. He's going to absolutely feast on the Cavs' lack of like defense in the paint and everything else. So it's just going to be, I feel like, yeah, this could be an ugly game. And I want to say, like, oh, remember last time we poo-pooed on the Cavs going into Denver and playing the Nuggets? Well, this is definitely a different circumstance overall, because I think Cleveland was in a lot better health at that point. Actually, no, they weren't. So maybe, you know what? Maybe, Chris, maybe you're wrong. Maybe we can disagree on something two nights in a row. Maybe the Cavs are going to pull off that sneaky upset again. But yeah, maybe the Cavs put up a better fight against Denver, but I don't think they're actually going to win this one. And San Antonio, I feel like, is going to be an ugly game too, because it'll just be death by mid-range shots against them. And Hey, shout out to friend of the pod, James Rapine. Maybe we'll get a taste of what DeMar DeRozan's going to look like in Cleveland next year.
One other thing that I will say this week that I'm intrigued by is that Kemba Walker looks like he's going to play on Tuesday for Boston. So they're going to be on the second half of a back-to-back, which probably gives the Cavs a better chance than we're giving them of winning that game, just based on everything we know about the body and rest and everything. I wonder if you'd play a back-to-back right away. I would really like to see how Colin Sexton defends Kemba.
Yeah, I would too. And I don't know. I feel like Brad Stevens is smart enough that even if Kemba could be back, like, you know, just this is just like, you know, a rest day, quote unquote, on your calendar where you kind of like it's, I'm looking at their injury report right now. Like Jason Tatum's day to day, Marcus Smart's day to day, Kemba Walker is reported out, Robert Williams is reported out. Like Brad Stevens could pull the plug on all these guys and just let Jaylen Brown absolutely eviscerate Jetty Osmond in Cleveland.
Poor Jetty.
Yeah, poor Jetty. Like, God, he's on his down spell for a little bit, guys. But he'll bounce back and we'll all feel a little bit better soon. But I could easily see Brad Stevens like looking at the big picture here and saying, like, granted, Milwaukee is the king of the Eastern Conference this year, but Boston, you know, is a good squad and they could kind of, you know, think about a long term thing here with the playoffs, you know. About a little over a month, 2 months away at this point, and they just kind of plan ahead and just make this a mandatory rest day for their key guys and maybe, you know, spare the Cavs a little bit. But, you know, maybe Brad Stevens is also super pissed that a fellow college man like John Boeheim, because, you know, Brad coached at Butler and was very successful there, and he will show no mercy on the Cavs for letting John Boeheim or ruining John Boeheim's love of the game and just absolutely destroys him. I don't know. It's going to be a bumpy week this week, that's for sure.
Yeah. Is there, aside from just like the quality of the game or like how well you think the Cavs will do, is there one of those games you're most looking forward to?
If Jason Tatum plays, I mean, I like watching him play and people kind of make fun of me for saying that I like watching Jason Tatum play. So if he is available to play against Cleveland, like he'll be fun to watch. But I'm more so just kind of hoping that Cleveland regains some good health towards the end of this week so that when they head into that tilt against Denver and when they play San Antonio on Sunday, that they're a little bit more at full strength so that it's not going to be absolutely agonizing because both of those teams are good on both sides of the ball and it could just, you know, make it a little bit more fun for Chris and I because those are weekend games and folks, there's probably a good chance Chris and I will be goofing around in the press box. So I'd rather have a good time watching the game.
Spoiler, I will not be at Saturday's game. I'm going to support a friend playing in a band. So if you're at the Grog Shop on Saturday, come say hi. So Evan will be there joking with Spencer Davies.
How dare you have a social life?
Yeah, I committed to this. I was like, all right, the Cavs are playing the Nuggets. But we'll watch it. We'll talk about it on the pod. That's going to be it for today's show. Follow Evan on Twitter at MNotEvan. I'm on Twitter at CWMWrites. Evan, anything coming up at Forbes that you want to tease here?
Still working through that Andre Drummond fit piece that I've been kind of just, it's looking like a little bit of a long range kind of thing. Kind of have a couple other fun projects in the works that I really won't expand upon yet because I don't want to make a promise that I may not be able to keep, but no, it's looking like it's going to be a fun couple months and then I'll start, you know, acting like I'm a draft expert when I book Trevor Magnati a lot. What about you, bud?
A thing on Colin Sexton's free throws coming up. That's going to be my big thing. Got some quotes from JB in there, including one he said on Monday that I just came across that I think is notable, but that's kind of the big thing. I finally want to just distill that down there. And you that's know, put some bronze over at Forbes. Yeah, it's something that I keep talking about and writing when you get out of the habit of writing is like not the easiest things to do. So you got to like break those habits a little bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Find Evan on Twitter. Find me on Twitter. Find the pod on Twitter at Lockdown Cavs. Email me if you have disagree with my takes. I seriously will email you back because I'm willing to email people back. I enjoy that. Just be nice to me. Don't be rude. Enjoy the pod. Hope you guys enjoyed the pod. Hope you enjoyed the game as much as you could. And we'll talk to you tomorrow. We'll